Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying! There's no crying in baseball!
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by
now. No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Bitch, look at that, he hit the fucking ball. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. We are at our patrons' movie choice of the month. The patrons nominated, voted on, and selected Bad Words. Our patrons went with the spelling bee as the sport of choice for this month's movie. I will say, I think they picked a winner. This one is going to make for a great episode. The patrons have been on fire lately, and they have the floor for the month of December, voting on Christmas movie, a hockey movie, a patron's choice episode, a movie like this. So shout out to our producer level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, James Kowalewski, and Chris Mikoski. If you want to support the show, if you want to vote on movies, if you want to tell us how this podcast needs to go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. You can support the show, vote on movies. Like I said, the patrons are picking pretty much the entire slate for December: Christmas movie, regular sports movie, patron's choice. And at a certain tier, you get a Big Screen Sports sticker. It's a great sticker, if I do say so myself. So do that, support the show, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Of course, rate, leave a review. You know, you folks know the drill. We're coming at you every Monday. Today, joining me to talk about Bad Words, a guy who I'm not sure if he's a good speller, but he gives off good speller vibes. I guess we'll see. But it is my buddy returning to the podcast, Darren Vaught. Darren, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. I was all in on the Scripps spelling bee as a youth. So this, I think is a good fit.
I am not a good speller, so I need your good spelling energy. I am one of these folks who is very thankful for spell check. Needed in my life. It's the straw that stirs the drink for me, spell check. But Darren, you've got a project coming up that I personally have been wildly excited for months now. Tell the folks.
Yeah. So by the time this is released or shortly after, hopefully we will have a Kickstarter up. A friend, Brian McLawhorn, and I have a narrative podcast called K and the Crazies. And for college basketball fans who are well aware of who Coach K is, Mike Krzyzewski, currently in his final season as Duke men's basketball head coach, you are probably aware of the Cameron Crazies, the students who inhabit Cameron Indoor Stadium, their home venue, and the phenomenon that is. But a lot of people, I think, sort of get the surface level and that's it of what it is. And there's the tenting that goes on out in Krzyzewskiville. And it's this wild, detailed process that leads to students getting into games and getting those seats where they can jump up and down and they have their chance and they paint themselves blue and white and
they cheer for villains.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's all that involved, and this narrative podcast covers all of it. It is centered around an interview with Mike Krzyzewski himself. We've got the woman.
A never aired interview, correct?
Never on anything, ever. This actually started as a documentary film project. So we've got the interview with Kay recorded and it's video, but we've run into some bumps in the road with that particular project. So when Kay announced his retirement, Brian and I sort of circled up and we were like, well, the audio's really good quality too. Why don't we just strip it down to that and turn this into a narrative podcast series? So it'll be 6 to 8 episodes with Coach K being an interview. The woman who is credited with being the very first to tent in Krzyzewskiville when she was a student at Duke, Kim Reed. We've got a long sit down with her. Her daughter's actually a freshman at Duke and is interested in becoming a Cameron Crazy. So there's this cool full circle thing there. There's this tent that has become sort of a legacy tent at Duke. It's the only one of its kind. They refer to it as Das Boot. And Brian and I befriended the originators of Das Boot back when they were students, and they're like pushing 30 now. I mean, that's how long we've been working on this thing. So like, it's cool to sort of finally be putting something together for it. We just had hours and hours and hours of interviews. We've got, you know, word from referees who interact with the Crazies on a regular basis, opposing players, of course, administrators who have seen it firsthand. And it's a cool project. It's a lot of fun. I think it's going to be an interesting listen. So we're opening it up to a Kickstarter to try and fund the production costs, especially considering for 7 years we treated it like it was going to be a film that racked up a decent bit of personal spending just to try to get it off the ground. So
I will. The same reason we have a Patreon for this show, I just want to advise the folks, content is not free.
Yes.
It takes quite a significant investment. You would be surprised.
Yeah. And then after the Kickstarter and we get adequate funding for production, then I promise it's just going to be available for you to tap a subscribe button and it's going to be there. So Kay and the Crazies, I'll get up with you about a link and you can share that if you want.
That'll be in the show notes. It'll be on our Twitter. Yeah. Everyone go support this show because I need it. I'm going to be supporting this show. I'm very, very excited. This is, you told me about this months ago and I feel like I text you every couple of weeks. Like,
hey, what's
less
up?
Than
what's
that? Like, hey man, what's going on with the K stuff? Need to know. Well, folks, check that out. Again, support Darren. He has been a supporter of this show. He is longtime guest number 2 or 3 on this show, I think, when we did Major League.
Yeah, we did Major League. Wow.
Yeah. We need to revisit that, I think.
Yeah.
I've redone some of the old first run of episodes now that we're in a little more of a groove, and I think we should revisit that at some point. But Darren, let's talk spelling. Let's talk bad words. The 2013 dark comedy. A spelling bee loser sets out to exact revenge by finding a loophole and attempting to win as an adult. Someone on IMDb wrote that summary, and I don't think watched the movie because there's nothing about him being a spelling bee loser. It starred Jason Bateman, Catherine Hahn, and Allison Janney, and Philip Baker Hall. It was directed by Jason Bateman. Bateman's directorial debut. It's got a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes. The screenplay for this one was featured on the 2011 Blacklist, which is the most liked unmade scripts of that year. Bateman ended up taking the reins, starring in it himself. Darren, you were a first-time viewer of this movie that the patrons decided to have us cover. Your impressions and impressions of Bateman doing everything in this one.
Yeah, well, I didn't realize when I pulled it up to watch it on HBO Max. First of all, I didn't realize I had access to an HBO Max subscription, but I did. So I pulled up the app and boom.
Pleasant surprise.
There it was. Pleasant surprise. I think it's my brother's. So a couple of surprises there because the opening credits rolled and I was like, oh, Bateman directed this also and is the star. And to that set the bar in a more manageable place, I think, because it's not impossible to do well, but it is such a difficult thing to do well, it seems. And, you know, this was his debut as a director as well. So it set the bar in a reasonable place. I found it enjoyable. The concept is great. I love the idea of a movie that's built around a spelling bee, right? You use the spelling bee as the vehicle for the movie in a same way that you would use any other sport.
And I love that it's a dark, inappropriate comedy too, because the spelling bee is such this sanctimonious institution with these frankly like nerdy buttoned up children, your future Rhodes Scholars, Harvard Med, that sort of thing. And you throw in honestly like a real piece of shit into that mix. And this is one for me that I think is a few things away, some tweaks from being from really going up a notch and being a really, really good movie. I think this one is really strong though. Mm-hmm. It made me laugh out loud, which, you know, especially now, I mean, this one came out in 2013. But especially now with it's not often that there's a recent movie that's like, I'm laughing out loud at this one. So this thing does a lot of things well, strong cast, that whole thing. All-star starter or bench warmer for you? Because I assume it's not a Hall of Fame.
No, and it can't even be a starter, right? Because of the unconventional nature of, I mean, if the player pool, right? If like we're at tryouts and there are the football movies, the baseball movies, the basketball movies that are trying out for this, like it's got to be a bench warmer. But I'm getting into a semantics thing. I thought it was good. I'm like you. It's a few steps short or a few missing elements short of being a really good movie. I guess it's like it's maybe a role player, maybe like a,
yeah, I'm going to say as a film, as a film itself, it's a strong starter. It's a sports movie. It doesn't, you know, listen, we've covered stuff that we've covered, like School of Rock. We've done Pitch Perfect. We've done stuff that feels like a sports movie, but isn't a sports movie. This has all the familiar makings of a sports movie. We've got a seeming underdog. We've got a big, you know, a big event and stuff like that. So it's a strong starter for me. I think this one as a film could have been an all-star with a couple tweaks. I think on Letterboxd, I gave it either 3 stars or 3.5 stars. You know what? I have my phone in front of me.
Yeah.
Let's see. I didn't write a review. I just did the, let's see, recent activity. I gave it 3.5 stars, and I'm going to stand by that. I feel like this is a 3.5 stars movie. And I will say I'm pretty generous on Letterboxd, I have to say.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the 66 on Rotten Tomatoes, I think you saw me nod when you mentioned it. Like, that felt right. That's to be expected, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. No, it's a good movie. I definitely enjoyed it. Few moments. I, like you, like, laughed out loud. Although a couple of the jokes that were like, oh, wait, when was this made again? Oh,
I know. It's probably a little different in 2021. Yeah. And there's some stuff I want to talk about Bateman. So Bateman has been in our lives for a long time. This is the third Bateman movie on this podcast where he was the lead in Teen Wolf 2, which is awful. Very young. I mean, that's when he was, you know, right after network TV. He is a role player in Necessary Roughness, another movie that is terrible, frankly. But Bateman's been around a long time, and what I love about Bateman has such range, even though he's got like the same tempo in all his movies, except for, I would say, Dodgeball, where he's completely zany. But he's the same kind of subdued fairly even keel guy, but he's got this range of being, you know, sweet, well-meaning kind of guy, like Arrested Development, I think would be the peak of that. You know, some other roles, you know, you could even say like in Hancock, he's this very earnest guy who's also kind of like, frankly, a cuckold. And then Horrible Bosses, but then he's got movies like this where he is just a fucking dirtbag. Like, he can do this in State of Play. He's like a smarmy guy. In Juno, he's like kind of the surprise shitty guy. And then obviously he's the lead in Ozark right now, who wants to believe that he is a good guy, but he is not. He does terrible things. So where, you know, do you prefer smug or sweet Bateman?
It's a good question. And I found myself when thinking about talking about him, I found myself wondering, like, okay, to what do I most closely associate Jason Bateman? Right? Like, is it one role that you envision when someone says Jason Bateman? There's Arrested Development, which I think is probably what he's most well known for, right? That's
it for me.
Yeah, I think so. But then I was like, okay, in terms of film and a movie, I don't know what that is.
It's interesting. I feel like Jason Bateman's film career is a lot more spotty than you'd remember, just because of how generally famous he is, and the fact that his TV shows, first Arrested Development, which got canceled early but is generally extremely well regarded and had this second life on Netflix, and then Ozark, now very popular. But you look at his movie career, at least like post 2000, and of stuff that he actually had a legitimate role in, you know, because like he's got a cameo in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, but it's not a Jason Bateman movie. If you put aside Zootopia, which is an excellent animated movie, but a little different, you know, there's Dodgeball, where he's got a quality role in that one, but he's not in the main cast.
Yeah,
I like Horrible Bosses. That's funny.
He's not the only one, right? I mean,
yeah, there's the three of them. But I would say that's probably his best in terms of how we view him and being popular. The Gift is generally well regarded, but that was kind of more of a like a quasi horror kind of, you know, thriller kind of weird movie. It's interesting. I like this version of Bateman, though. He plays like in this, and then in State of Play, the Russell Crowe, Ben Affleck movie, he plays like an he's not like a bad publicist or not a publicist, but he's sketchy.
Yeah,
and he is going for it.
And some of the quick-witted, long-winded insults that he gives in this one are just like so sharply delivered that it's like, why is he not this in everything? Why isn't this like his role, his type of role for more movies? Because he's good at it, and he's great at being prickly. And, you know, there's the airplane scene early with the kid that's the competitor, and you kind of first meet him, and he's just like, nope, this interaction. He just like, and shuts down the parent in the initial scene prior to the title screen. And he's good at it, man. And it's interesting because he could stand to be that kind of character a lot more often.
Yeah, he can be this guy, but he could also, you could see if it's a movie and he's just like a married dad of three who's a CPA getting into some hijinks.
Yeah, like Couples Retreat, he's just a dude who's a husband or whatever. And I'm looking down. They all blend together is kind of my initial point, right? Like, he's got so many of these. He's got the one, was it Melissa McCarthy that co-starred with him in
Identity Thief?
Yeah,
that movie is not good.
No, it's not.
that's when they were like, that was Melissa McCarthy coming off Bridesmaids, and they started throwing everything they could at her. Like, let's bank on how slapstick funny she is.
Yep.
Some of it works. I think Spy is hilarious.
Right.
Identity Thief is horrible.
Horrible. But he's like unsuspecting nice guy in that.
Yeah.
And I think that that is more often than not what he is in movies. So I'm with you. I like the darker version of him.
Yeah.
Here. And again, especially like if he wanted it, if this character in particular wanted to cut you deep, like he could and not even think twice about it. It was great.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into best scenes because starting off the opening B, basically the before the credits, that first B where we find out a lot of things we need to know. One, our character is a major asshole.
Yes.
Like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And we've got most of our plot. He has found this loophole to compete in the spelling bee. There's no questions about it. Basically, they come out, they have that argument, outside the school, and both he and Catherine Hahn basically make it clear this is how this is happening. He has found this loophole. He's compliant with all 80 pages. Catherine Hahn will file suit or put it in the papers or whatever. Should they say he can't compete? So we're, it's very important that they gave us the legal explanation and how hard they were making it on the spelling bee to start off this movie.
Yeah, I will say this. By the time I got through the midway point of the movie, I found myself wondering what could have been done differently in this initial scene because of Catherine Hahn and her character. So she comes over on the phone and like doubles down on the, oh, there's a loophole. You don't want this to get legal. You don't want it. Because she's really good in that type of role. And it's a role that she often plays, sort of like the get shit done boss bitch, using my air quotes or whatever. That's a role that she's typically cast in. And that did not at all turn out to be the role that she played. I wondered how much she was needed in that initial scene to sort of drive home the point, because I think he did a pretty okay job on his own with it. And it slowed down my process of understanding her character. But it was crucial to the greater plot, figuring out who he was and what was happening, that sort of thing. Are you saying that was your best scene or no?
No, I'm just going to run through them chronologically, yeah, but okay. I wanted to mention that scene. I thought it was a good opener.
Yeah.
The next scene is I'm calling just Noctivagant. The word our guy, poor guy, Braden,
yeah.
who basically we at this point with our main character, with Guy, with this scene where he gives Catherine Hahn's panties to a 10-year-old, causes him, insinuates that he had slept with that child's mom. We reach our conundrum of, is this character redeemable early in the movie?
Yeah.
And because of this, and, I really don't think so. And I think that's one of the big hangups with the movie is, despite, we get a look at his inner motivations, and that's something that I'm really behind. I think that's a good character development piece, but between this, the ketchup packets, it's enough to where it's like, this isn't a good guy. He has been wronged in his life, but that is not okay. Like every move that child makes up on stage with the underwear as he is like holding it in his hands just makes me cringe.
Can you tell your dad that I don't blame him for being so angry? And then can you do me another favor? Can you give these to your mother? She left those in my room last night. I would do it myself. But your dad is here and we've already covered his mood. I don't want to kick the nest. Do you know what I mean? Oh, buddy, good luck with that divorce. They get so nasty.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about probably a very dysfunctional marriage. I'm glad I was there for her.
And then you've got Philip Baker Hall, who's like, oh, looks like he's got his lucky hanky with him. Knowing that they did the TV thing and tried to put the ESPN televised element on there makes it even cringier, right? Because you imagine yourself watching the Scripps National Spelling Bee on ESPN and a kid's just got an adult woman's underwear just like handling it. This was tough. This was the scene that came to mind for me. It was so well done by Bateman. Again, like when he wanted to sort of drive a point home, he really buckled down on some of these, and just the dialogue that led up to the kid Brendan sheepishly walking up to the microphone, Noctivagant, the word perfect for what he now assumes his mother is doing behind his father's back. It was great.
And you mentioned like Bateman selling him on that too, and just like the quiet, confident delivery. He's so matter of fact.
So sweet.
With it.
She held me. but it really drove home the point of like, okay, this guy is going to do anything to win this competition. And, you know, we've seen maybe at that point we hadn't really seen on screen him spell a tough word yet. To me, it perfectly established, okay, I know what I'm getting from Guy Trilby.
Yeah. Yeah. We then get into Guy and Chaitanya's night out, which, it gave me what to me was the funniest moment of the movie. And I mean, cheap joke, the guy who walks out of the stall with the lobster clinging to his balls, that'll get me every time. That if you have a movie with that kind of like dick and balls humor, where someone, I mean, it's why Jackass still resonates 20 years later,
right?
Like that stuff is just always going to be funny.
Yeah. This is at the point at which I started to bring to the, like my front burner of my mind, the score of this film, because that montage was backed by some Beastie Boys. And then later in the closing credits and the last scene, you've got the Smashing Pumpkins, sneaky good score to this movie, and that one was perfect for it. But also just like the general dynamic of this adult and a kid, and the kid is being left to his own devices at this hotel, and he takes him out and they're just like pranking, which I don't know that I expected that when he first was like, come on, let's go have some fun. And it's like, oh yeah, they're doing donuts in the parking lot and you know, they're pranking people and that sort of thing. So it was a cool little turn, sort of down the pathway that I thought it was going to be, but not entirely, because I don't know. You see Bateman as, yeah, he hates people, but he probably also questions whether or not they're worth his time to even bother with them. So I don't know that I saw him being like a prankster prior to that.
Yeah, and we get that line about running around with his mom, like running away from rent or, you know, stuff like that. So we get, because at that point we don't really, and that's the whole theme of this movie, is we don't really know a lot about this guy. Yeah. We're trying to figure out, why is he doing this? Why is he like this? And that gives us a little insight as to at least kind of an idea between that. And then when Catherine Hahn is mentioning that he left school after eighth grade or whatever it was, that, okay, we have a little insight into he's had a tough life. He's had a tough go of it. We still don't know, you know, lots of people have had a tough go of it who aren't ruining the spelling bee and traumatizing 10-year-olds.
Well, that's so even a point still that his character makes, right? He's like, no, we all had our own stuff that we went through. And as he's trying to dismiss her and her questions. Yeah.
Yeah. But that scene is good. The child actor performance, Rohan Chand, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, folks. You know the drill. If you listen to this podcast, the names are not going to be correct. but I thought as a child actor, he was great in this movie. He was very sweet. He was sharp.
Yeah.
He goes toe to toe with Jason Bateman, who at that point had been in the business for 30 years. It is one of our more accomplished comedic actors. Like, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, and I had not seen the version of Jumanji that he was in, but I think he was just sort of like a bit role in that. But also,
is that the Rock Jumanji?
I think so. 2017.
So I think he I I believe I caught that when it was on like FX or something. I believe that the plot of that one is they go into the game and they are in the bodies of The Rock and Kevin Hart and whoever else,
okay,
and Jack Black and whoever else. So I believe he is the kid who goes into The Rock's body,
okay,
if I remember correctly.
And then I never saw Mowgli, which was 2018, but apparently he's Mowgli in that.
Yeah.
Starring role after the fact. So, you know, good to see that he's got some stuff going on after this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, he was good. And age-wise, let's see. On IMDb.
Got to be like close to 20 now.
Yeah, I mean, has to be, right? I'm trying to find it on here. Damn, where? All right, we're going to look him up on Wikipedia instead. Look at this.
He's got to have a Wikipedia.
Because, you know, Wiki's going to be age right away. 17. All right. He'll be 18 in January. So, yeah, like not the kid that he was in that movie. So, I don't know. Hopefully, I assume he's still capable of doing good work because, you know, Mowgli was just a few years ago. But, you know, hopefully we start to see him in some things. That would be kind of cool.
That would be yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for this guy. I mean, you go toe to toe with Bateman, because I mean, the next scene that I wanted to talk about was when Guy burns his study guide, the kid's study guide. He finds out he's been betrayed by this child. The dad, he and the dad are plotting against him, and then Guy burns his study guide. What this child has said is his best friend, essentially his study guide for the spelling bee. We've officially got a war. And then I love that Chaitanya gives it right back to him, and not only gives it right back to him, he ups the ante and gets him arrested.
Yeah, it calls the cops. He was like, a girl was screaming in this room. It got like, the kid got really dark really quickly when he needed to. When he had probably the most dynamic turn character-wise of anyone in the film, because when you first are introduced to him, he's just like this annoying kid who is always happy and chipper and just glad to be there and likes studying and stuff like that. And then again, he just takes this turn where it's like, okay, you need me to be villainous for a little bit? I can do that. And then he meets Bateman in the middle toward the end. So like, he does the full about face in this one, where I don't think anybody else can say that, any other character.
No, I mean, they're the only characters who really develop in any way. And I think that is one of the movie's kind of shortcomings, is not fleshing out most of any. And again, it's mainly about Guy, and then it's about Guy in this relationship with Chaitanya. But it's, you know, they're the only ones who really get fleshed out. So, I mean, I guess that leads into the final scene, basically the final showdown between these two, and they're alternating, you know, misspelling the words, and eventually Philip Baker Hall takes a chair to the face. The thing that cracked me up the most in this scene is when Guy has come to peace with, like, he's already wrecked the bee, he's ready to lose, and Chaitanya is like wanting to split it. He keeps misspelling the words, and Bateman with, pal, we're good.
He's like, I'm good. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
If you think everything I said was a lie, then I'll prove that it wasn't. It's not about winning to me anymore.
I don't give a shit about that. And I don't care about that either. With all due respect, very nice of you, very sweet. But I'm not here for that. I'm not here for a fucking trophy or a check. We're these idiots. Come on.
I have feelings, and I wasn't a good friend. I'm sorry.
We're good.
It's also like a really... when you pull back the lens to the broader spectrum of like sports movies too, think about how often this could be the case, and from a comedic writing standpoint would be hilarious, right? Like, imagine if in a sporting event, like you go to overtime in a basketball game, and for multiple overtime periods, both teams are so bad that neither scores and it remains tied, right? And you just keep doing this and pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. It's a very basic comedic principle that they have applied to this the spelling.
It's like, have you seen 7 Days in Hell or 7 Days of Hell? The it's Andy Samberg and then Kit Harington. It's like a Lonely Island production about Wimbledon, like a Wimbledon match that goes 7 days. If you haven't seen this,
I'm aware of it, but I have not seen it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, literally the second we're done recording, you have to. It's just fucking phenomenal. Okay. Like you'll shit your pants.
You know,
I do
love the Lonely Island, so that's I'll have to check that out. But that is what it's such a simple thing for the plot of this movie, or to get the point across, right? Like they could have just settled it at that. Like, you know, they're both okay with the other, and each is okay with losing or submitting or whatever. But they drew it out in this long comedic way that again ended up getting Dr. Bowman a chair.
A well-deserved chair. And then, you know, at the end, the friends split things. Like, that kid is too pure for this earth. Just absolutely that's the one thing. This movie didn't have our main character, probably not a redeemable human, has a lot of apology in his life to do. But that kid brings it back to where we're still like, oh, that's great. Like, this kid is sweet. This is who we should be sending our love to.
Yeah. Well, and again, you didn't get that. Like, there was development with Guy or Bateman, but he didn't come all the way around to it, because the main reason he was okay with submitting the title was because he was like, oh, okay, I don't need to do this to accomplish what I initially set out to, right? And his inner dialogue even says that. I wish we would have seen a little bit more of like a round development with Bateman himself, because it's weird to me assessing it after the fact and realizing, oh, like the kid was the best character. Not that necessarily, you know, he outperformed Bateman, but as it was written, the kid was easily the best character and did the most development.
Yeah. What was the best scene for you?
I think it was the underwear. I loved it, man. Like, that got me hooked too. There's something to be said for that. At first, you know, first couple scenes, I was a little confused as to what Catherine Hahn was doing. Bateman was compelling, but I wasn't like in yet. And then it's like, okay, it's going to be like that. Like, he not only is he in this competition, but he's going to be cutthroat with it.
The benefit of him doing something like that, that's completely irredeemable and like, but that ridiculous, is it's like, okay, we've crossed that line now, and we can kind of just like, anything's on the table at
yes,
this point.
Yep. Anything's on the table. And then you were like, oh, he's faking a period for this poor girl. Like, you know.
Which, like, hey man, we said anything's on the table. We didn't mean that.
So yeah, that one, I think was my favorite.
Yeah, I am torn between, I loved The Night Out. We didn't mention Chaitanya's face when he sees boobs for the first time, which you know, we're gonna get it in the most realistic parts of this movie, but that facial expression, I think resonates. The lobster
was Bateman like, you want to go get ice cream after? And he's like, fuck ice cream. How much does it cost to touch him?
And then when they get back to the hotel, he's like, buddy, if you had a dollar more. So good. I'm gonna go with The Night Out. I think that was really funny. Good bonding moment, stuff like that. Let's take a quick ad break and get back with best quote.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. and Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right, we're back. Best quote. And now with the comedy, a lot of the times the best quote just ends up being like the joke, the best one-liner, what made you laugh. I already said what made me laugh the most was actually, it was not a line. It was a nice piece of physical lobster comedy. I will say when they're on the plane and Guy tells him his favorite word is autofellatio, and Chaitanya asks, what's the origin? And he says loneliness.
Yes. That's the first one that I like noted in my head. That was good. That was a good one to me. I'm trying to think what else is in the mix for this best quote.
When him and Han are having sex and she's doing the don't look at me thing, and Bateman says your face eats hard-ons. But Catherine Hahn has a special skill of being hilarious in like these freakish sex scenes, because like Step Brothers is like that too.
She's like up on the urinal afterwards.
The Goods, which is a movie that I'm huge on. Like, yeah, Catherine Hahn is a pro.
Yeah. Again, though, just like the insignificance of that scene. I don't know if it's ever applied for a movie that you and I have discussed, but like Hollywood just has this way of unnecessarily wedging in romance. And again, like after the final scene, they're like holding hands and running off, Bateman and Catherine Hahn are. And I just wonder, like, was that necessary? You know, like some of
Yeah, because you don't see anything with those two.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that they had sex, that would lead you to believe that they would have sex or be romantic in any, like, and like, that's the one thing. And I think we'll get into it with Catherine Hahn and then also Allison Janney.
Yeah.
And, you know, how this movie fleshed out the female characters. But while Catherine Hahn might be a title you could bestow her, like funniest in a sex scene in the world award, like she yeah. again, she does this repeatedly, not sure how necessary it was other than just the straight up comedy.
Right.
Bateman has one more line when they are eating ice cream, when he and Chaitanya are eating ice cream. He says, you need to slow down, look like you got into the wrong dude's ass.
Chaitani says he tries to give an insult while they're sitting there eating ice cream. Damn it. Why did I not write that one down? And it's the point at which Bateman is like, yeah, you're not good at this. Like you're not good at insulting verbally. Man, I wish I could. That's all right. We can move on. That's going to hang us up. But that one was pretty funny. Just to me, people missing with jokes is funny. Or you know, it's like the Borat, what is up with it, vanilla face. It's like, all right, that's, you know.
Yeah, well, and as someone raising an eight-year-old, I mean, raising a child in general who is eight, kids are not funny when they're trying to be funny.
Right.
They are funny unbeknownst when they do something dumb that they are not intending to do. But when kids are trying to be funny, they are deeply unfunny. I don't know when kids develop legitimate comedic timing, but I can tell you it is not eight, does not appear to be 10. You know, maybe in their teens. I've seen videos of a young Seth Rogen doing stand up as an early, you know, as like an early teenager. So it might be maybe like 13, 14. Kids can develop some comedic timing.
Yeah. And that is what this captured. I wish I could remember the insult that he tried to deal. But it was funny because it was not good. And again, the character at this point is trying to just hit with a massive zinger, and it's just not there.
Well, let's go to the most realistic or authentic parts of this movie.
Yeah. This is needed.
Yeah. So the thing is, And I'll be honest, and folks, you might be surprised. I don't have much experience with the spelling bee. I don't know. You know, it seems like they were all good spellers. Seems like, you know, everything was ship shape. I do have two, just in general, kind of like realistic or authentic things that are a little deeper, not really about spelling or any of the stuff. Parental abandonment is a deep scar, can cause people to do some, you know, can cause a lot of legitimate hurt. And that's what this movie unpacks very late into the movie. This driver for guys. So I thought in terms of, because that's the whole plot of this movie. It's not really a spelling bee movie. It's a mystery movie. It's why is this guy doing this? And when we get to that, it's a big, oh, that makes sense. And that can hurt a person deep, and that can break a person, especially when that person was not, it seemingly not supplanted by any sort of stable childhood,
right,
at all. And so I thought that was an effective marker for why is he wired this way.
Yeah. And you kind of saw, it wasn't a parallel, but again, I wondered from the time that it was announced as such, why the kid was left in the hotel himself. So you sort of saw some similarities in, okay, the way Bateman's character was just straight up abandoned, but this more like tactical semi-abandonment, make you more independent type of thinking, and like they were kindred in that way for a moment, right? For mm-hmm. for the scene, the night out scene, and that's sort of how they connected, I guess, is because Bateman's always had this freedom, for worse, for, you know, taking the expression for better or worse, it's clearly for worse in this case, and the kid had never had that, and is sort of being introduced to the one extreme of being able to use that. That was sort of a parallel that I don't know that they explored it as much as they should have or could mm-hmm. have. But that could have been something to make it a little bit more like, make it not that there were a ton of loose threads in the relationship between the two of them, but it could have been tightened up a little bit with some of that.
Yeah. What did you have as the most authentic or realistic part of this one?
I think the motivator is what it is. You know, from talking about other sports movies, the motivator is like, winning is always a motivation, but it's never just winning, right? Like when we talk about Major League, it's, they want to stick it to the owner. It's in other movies, it's whatever the case.
Yeah, it could be like the natural. It's like redemption.
Yeah,
it's like unfulfilled, you know, unfulfilled promise, you know, stuff like that. But this one has a clear motivator.
Yeah, and I like that it's sort of derived from sort of the psyche and emotional space, because I think not that there aren't films that do that, but again, it's part of the dark spin on this. There was a more mainstream version of this in a parallel universe that does not take it down that route, right? And they stay on a safer path down the middle.
Yeah. This movie could be made like I think for worse off, in that this is kind of like a kookier comedy, in that you know, this guy had lost a spelling bee in third grade and just never got over it, or got like screwed, like felt like he got cheated or something when he was in like third or fourth grade, and is like getting his revenge on the institution of the spelling bee itself. And I think this motivator more explains this drastic behavior than just, you know, a 40-year-old man who's got a, you know, a bone to pick with the national spelling bee.
Yeah, it makes more sense, as weird as that is. Like it's even wackier, but it makes it make more sense. So yeah, no, that's the definition. That to me is somewhat authentic, right? And because otherwise you can't make a spelling bee movie. That's mm-hmm. right. I mean, without without the thing that's happening outside of the actual competition in this movie. And the same could be said for any other sport in a sports movie, right? You can't make a football movie that's no different than going to watch a football game. You got to have some sort of character driven, emotion driven element there.
You got to build rooting interest.
Yeah, for sure. Other than just like, okay, you know, I'm from here. This is my team.
Yeah. Yeah. The least realistic or authentic part of this one, I am pretty sure that Guy would be arrested for giving a 10-year-old underwear, women's underwear, or the period prank. Either one probably gets him arrested, probably gets him put on a sex offender registry. Especially, I was thinking, okay, so Braden walks off the stage, he throws the underwear at his parents. His parents, then they like, what did he throw at us? They pick it up. These are clearly women's underwear. How did you get women's underwear?
Questions. Oh,
the 40-year-old man that every single person hates gave me underwear. Wait, are you saying a 40-year-old man gave you a pair of women's underwear? That's what I'm saying. Okay, let's go to jail.
He's out, right? They wanted a reason to get him out. Boom. That's done. Yeah.
You're telling me Allison Janney didn't see that kid throw those underwear and then run right over there to be like, you were sitting next to Guy and you just threw some underwear at your parents. What happened?
You're right. Let's investigate this. As we are working very diligently, as I've explained to the angry mob of parents, to try and get this dude out of here. That's a good one. How about like giving a 10-year-old shots under the bar?
That too.
Right?
Yeah, that too. Especially because Chaitanya's dad was in... So they get back from the night out. And we see Chaitanya's dad is in the hotel room.
Yeah.
And then we find out later that they had kind of planned on that. But
the kid's 70 still, pounds or whatever he is.
Yeah.
And he's
and
like,
that dad's going to see it. Yeah, he's going to see it in the eyes. He's going to smell it on the breath.
Yeah.
Like, I think at that point, he's going to kind of throw out the, hey, we're trying to sabotage this guy to, again, great way to sabotage the guy who's the biggest threat to your son. Say he took your son out to a bar.
Right. It actually hold him accountable for the legit things that he is doing throughout the span of this movie, rather than trying to come up with some kind of kooky side plot. Yeah, there was a lot of that. Interestingly, and you know, just like, not that you can't whisper to somebody in the chair next to you, but again, this dude was like, they had eagle eyes on this dude, and that's the picture that they wanted to paint. But he kind of got away with some stuff without anybody seeing or noticing, right? Or like, you know, they put him in the storage closet of a room, and it's like, he puts a bag of his shit on the receptionist's desk or whatever. Like that's something too, that like, if those actually were the circumstances and you're actually trying to get him thrown out, if you or I defecated in a bag and set it on a hotel lobby's desk, we're no longer staying at that hotel. Like that's just,
yeah, crazy. From my understanding, you are out of there. I have been told I cannot urinate somewhere publicly before and potentially risk some serious trouble. So, shout out Waffle House. we've all been young once. Did you have anything else for least authentic in this one besides just a 40-year-old man competing in a spelling bee?
All right. So you, this might get to our, again, it's an issue of semantics. This might get to our best athlete and like people being good spelling athletes. I've got something along those lines. I will say also the headsets being used by the broadcast team, the public broadcast team, those are from like the 80s. And this movie was made in 2013. It struck me as a little weird, especially because we're accustomed to seeing this type of thing play out on ESPN. It is a big production.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge deal. The whole set in general, the spelling bee, that vibe was felt very like 1980. Felt very small scale for what this was. Because the script spelling bee, if I remember correctly, that isn't a massive auditorium, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. And again, national television. ESPN's been doing that thing for years now at this point. And they did establish that it's the national public TV. So it's like a PBS that's airing it. But even still, it's a national outlet. Like, they had like the one camera they set up in the front row as a prop that's like turned toward something that's clearly not going to make it on TV. And he walks. I noticed that Bateman like shuffled by that at one point. And the screen, the monitor didn't change when he walked in front of it. Right. So it's clearly not working, the camera. And if it was, it was pointed in the wrong direction. But they just had this. It was a weirdly old vibe. I guess the auditorium probably didn't lend itself to making it look more modern, but right, it seemed to be like an old setting, and that's kind of what they were going for, because that's the typical setting for a spelling bee or whatever. But the public TV setup was weird. Like, their headsets didn't even fit. It was odd. And then having Dr. Bowman on the broadcast, not that that wouldn't happen, right? The founder of the Scripps National Spelling Bee certainly could be the analyst on an ESPN broadcast of that mm-hmm. kind or whatever. And, I hope Philip Baker Hall is okay, because clearly I hope he was okay in 2013, 2014, whenever they shot this, because man, did you struggle to understand what he was saying?
Okay, I'm glad you said it. Yeah, not so. Philip Baker Hall, another guy who has been in our lives for a long time. Heart 8, awesome movie, great early PTA. Rush Hour. He's in Zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
Would argue, you know, for me, like that's a top three movie of that decade. Yeah, Philip Baker Hall was not at his. He still had the aura. He still had what he brings to the screen, but definitely a little harder to understand. I don't know if that was slurring. I don't know if that was just getting older, struggling a little bit with his enunciation, but not his. He wasn't at his sharpest.
No, and it was mainly the TV setting to me, because like when he had the headset on and they were doing the TV bit. This is televised, that sort of thing. That's when I struggled to understand what he was saying. Whereas, you know, they had the scene, he and Bateman, that was meant to be sort of intense, and his threatening Bateman outside at the duck pond. You know, I tried to notice then. It was like, okay, he's speaking pretty clearly here. When he picks up the microphone and yells at the crowd, I think it was pretty well understandable. And yeah, for whatever reason, maybe it's because he had his ears covered up, and I'm sure they weren't like functioning headphones. So like, just from a broadcast perspective, like if I can't hear myself talking, I'm gonna struggle to speak sometimes. And you know, he's in an advanced age.
Yeah, he was 83. Or he was 83 or like 82 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Looking at it now, he seems to have, he's still among the living.
Mm-hmm.
He has, his last credit is 2017. So 4 years after this came out. But man, he's been.
Was that BoJack Horseman? What was his last credit?
Okay. So his last film credit was 2017. Last TV credit is Room 104.
Okay. Yeah, BoJack, he was 2015. He was...
Man, Philip Baker Hall has been doing it since 1970. God damn. And it looks... I mean, and he really hits this... I know, you know, TV and stuff like that, but it looks like... I mean, he's mostly guest star roles and stuff. Like, he hits it late. Like, if we want to shift this into a Philip Baker Hall podcast, it really seems like he kind of hits his stride... in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, he gets
dude, the 2000s, let's see, he gets busy for him.
Oh yeah, he gets hard eight. Well, I mean, once you've been grinding for so long, you might as well cash those checks. But yeah, he goes hard eight with PTA. Then he links up with PTA again for Boogie Nights, and then like we're on. We're Air Force One, Truman Show, Rush Hour, Talented Mr. I mean, fucking Magnolia, The Insider. He goes Talented Mr. Ripley, Magnolia, The Insider. Fucking back to back to back. That's an Emanski right there. That's a great Emanski.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my, I mean, incredible stuff.
Gee.
Wow, good for Philip Baker Hall.
Man.
Love that for him.
Look at this, 185 acting credits. That's insane. Good for him. But again, not his best work in Bad Words. No. And again, like you said, the aura is there. And I feel like he's assigned the same type of character, especially later in his life. He's assigned that powerful, heinous, in some cases, is going to leverage a situation against you type character. And at the Duck Pond, he accomplished that.
And thinking about that conversation they have at the Duck Pond in retrospect, when he talks about he's extracted himself from difficult situations or things, you know, that would turn his life around. And like Guy, meanwhile, like when you watch that with the lens of knowing that he is the father that abandoned Guy, I mean, Guy had to want to drown him in the Duck Pond.
Well, and Guy mentions, I think the quote is, "For what I'm trying to do, I'm way ahead in ways that you don't even know." So it's like his awareness in that moment that Bowman is his father, and like that's the whole reason you're doing this is threatening you and standing right in front of you, and he has no idea. Yeah, that on a second watch would be a little bit more of an interesting scene.
Yeah. Is there anything else about this one that worked that we haven't talked about? I mean, I think we've talked about Bateman, that range. I think he carries this one well, especially he's doing it behind the camera. I think Han and Bateman are a great combo when they are on screen together, although I would have liked that a little, you know, maybe some things changed. Is there anything that we haven't touched on?
No, I mean, he was great for what he needed to be. I wish the script would have written him a little rounder. We've talked about the kid which worked great. Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. The score, I even mentioned that it was good. That worked. I've got probably a handful on the things that didn't though.
Yeah. Let's roll into that. For me, the main thing, there's two main things for me. It's one, that the things he did to the other contestants are pretty irredeemable. You know, he's clearly a hurt person, but I think, you know, and there's argument for, you know, hey, not everyone's perfect, and like movie, you know, sometimes a movie character is like a bad person, but like I think you can still do this one where it shows that he's you know, he's a hurt person, he's definitely rough around the edges, and he's a little despicable at times, but the stuff to children is morally broken. You know, the movie isn't as good if he's just a really good guy who's trying to do this, but it also, like, you know, don't convince a 10-year-old she just had her period. I could do without that.
So I'm okay with it if they do it differently, not the actual things like the adult woman's underwear to our guy, Brendan, or I even like convincing the girl that she's having her first period is fine. If the redeemable action is better, because to me, it all gets back to the redeemable action for him was still motive based. It was still, oh, well, I don't even need to win. So it's no, you know, it's no loss for me to just let this kid win.
Yeah, basically this worked out for him.
It worked out for me, and I got the satisfaction that I thought was going to require the championship, and it turns out I'm content now and I don't even need it, right? Like that makes it a much easier like olive branch to extend to the kid, whereas the kid has every right in the world. Like this grown man comes rumbling into your child's competition that you are fit to win. He like does, he encourages you to do extremely illegal and dangerous things. He sets personal property of yours on fire. Like, you've got all the reason in the world to just be like, no, fuck this guy, I'm gonna win. And he takes that step from a moral perspective that Bateman's character absolutely in no way does not, right? So if you build the plot in a way that the step down to his new friend is more severe, then it's fine, right? Those things are, you mentioned they're irredeemable. I mean, realistically, they would be. But in the context of a script, yeah, you can turn him around just like that. And it's like, oh, wasn't that funny that he did that when he was a terrible person, but he's changed now.
he's a good guy now.
Yeah. And I think that's what they were going for, but like, no, you're not getting that by me. Right. Cause I'm sitting here thinking, it's like, okay, he's not losing anything. He's not giving anything up really
It's interesting. There's almost no downside for him in this entire movie.
None.
Like, you could call it that hiccup of getting arrested, but even that, like, he's in and out. That's kind of an interesting thing to look back on, is that you never feel, because again, he's our main character. We are rooting for him, even though we probably shouldn't be rooting for him.
Yeah.
And there's never a moment where we feel like he's not in complete control, to be honest, which is kind of, for a guy like this, he probably in a lot of his life has not felt like he's in control of anything, but we have, you know, he's smooth sailing through this. We know he's not seemingly not going to miss any words. You know, he hasn't like everything just goes according to plan.
And as a result, nothing requires him to look inward or change in a major way. Like, the only thing that changed for him from beginning of the movie to the end of the movie is mysteriously like having this love interest with the journalist now, which is a throwaway because that makes no sense. But he also, he accomplished what he set out to do. I think in terms of who he was, it stayed flat the whole time. It was a straight line. So yeah, that gets back to the larger point that I just wish he would have been a more round character.
Yeah, well, let's talk about relationship with the journalist. Just Han and Allison Janney, too. It's interesting, like, Allison Janney is so fucking good. It's just absolutely, it's incredible how good she is. Like, the West Wing, she's a killer. Allison Janney's a fucking killer in everything she does. And they had a star wide receiver, and they threw her the ball twice. And one of them was like a short slant, and the other was a screen that got kind of bottled up. And like, it's interesting. I mean, again, if you can have Allison Janney for that role, by all means, get Allison Janney. Like, never, that's never not a bad thing. But it's like, you didn't really need her because that role is kind of not fleshed out. I'm wondering what was left on the floor as far as her scenes with her and scenes with Catherine Hahn, because Allison Janney's character, remember that Proctor, who she was a complete dick to, comes and says, you know, you're done. And we don't hear from her again. No, That's it.
It was like they had her and Philip Baker Hall to sort of serve the same purpose up to that point. And they determined, okay, he's essential to the plot. We don't need her anymore. So I'm like, I'm with you again. Get Allison Janney if you can get her, but that's even a character you didn't even need to have written in.
Yeah.
Because
Philip Baker Hall could have been the guy dealing with all the angry people as well. Like, she has that one great, it's that great scene. We get her.
I was going to say, I mean, that's what they had Dr. Bowman doing anyway at the end. Right?
Yeah.
Once she was gone, I mean, he could have handled the two scenes or whatever that required that, or, you know, there was the initial scene, right, where he was in there.
You know, they meet and you get the three of them to meet. Yeah. And that's good. Like, it's good seeing the three of them on camera together, Janney and Han and Bateman. But yeah, it seems with that. And then it seems with the Han role that they weren't quite sure what her like exactly what she's doing, what's motivating her. Is she a real serious journalist? Is she kind of like this fringe clickbaity person? She's also having sex with this guy, which doesn't seem like, if she's seriously trying to do this, it doesn't seem, because he's the least appealing human in the world at this point. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of not thought out, but it's just like, hey, this sex scene would be funny. We should do it.
Yeah. And like the first time they introduced the concept or the fact that they're having sex, it was just kind of like, wait, what? Really? Like first scene, you were telling me that she was like a badass go-getter who gets things done. Then she's like this waffling journalist who can't get a straight answer out of him. And then it's like, oh, you know, we're just doing this thing where we have sex some. Like, those were the first three scenes for her. So, like, I didn't get a good grasp of what her purpose was in it. And then by the end, they're trying to force this romantic thing. And we didn't see any indication that that's what was going to be. And it was a weird role. And again, like, not to take it here, but those are the two most prominent female roles in the movie, right? Like, why were those the ones getting less out of it? When you've got two really, really, really good pieces in Han and Janny, right? Like, they could have greatly enhanced the movie. But those were the roles that just had things taken from them, evidently. So I don't know. Yeah. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, there's we'll get into that here in a few minutes with how to improve it. Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. I'm going with the cat. Like, I'm considering everyone besides Bateman a supporting character, and I think you got to give it to the kid.
100%.
Kid's amazing.
And if he qualifies, 100%. Because again, best character in the movie.
Yeah.
Most well written. The kid nailed it. Best character.
One shout out to Ben Falcone, who is I think he's the guy from the TV station.
He's like the play by play.
He's doing the play by play. Always good to see Ben Falcone. We talked about Melissa McCarthy earlier. I think their most notable work together. But yeah, the kid Rohan Chand, hope he's doing good work. I hope I got even like 60% close to pronouncing his name, but
I need to go watch Mowgli. Good stuff. I need to watch Mowgli now. Like,
you don't. No, like, that's one that if you could have seen it in a theater, pretty cool. Okay. Cause like, it, you know, visual, it's got the, you know, it's live action Jungle Book and stuff like that or whatever. Cause I think that's what Mowgli was, that live action Jungle Book.
Yeah,
maybe it was live action Jungle Book.
At the very least, I think wasn't there a live action Jungle Book that was entitled Jungle Book and then Mowgli, maybe?
Oh, I didn't realize those were separate. Maybe you need to go see Mowgli. I don't know. I think I've seen, because I know Scarlett Johansson was a snake, and it was a sexual sounding snake.
Sure.
Yeah. Folks, let us know what you think about Mowgli. So The Big Chill. So obviously this isn't your typical sports movie, and like, it's definitely not a Big Chill moment when he spells the last word right. When Guy pulls up at the end in that auction police car, Blues Brothers style, not full chills, but I liked it. That made me happy.
I didn't really like this one because you didn't fully flesh out the car thing. It was a nice, again, it was intended to be this rounded character thing. And by the end, you're trying to convince us that he's like buddy buddy with this kid. And yeah, I mean, if they're both in a fixed setting where they're in the same hotel and they have to hang out with somebody, you sold me on the idea that he's going to want to maybe hang out with this kid. Best friends, like going to pick him up from school and chase down his bullies. It's a little much.
How many more bonding scenes did we need? Did we need a little bit Guy telling him a little bit more? Because what we see are the small indications we get from Guy. He's moving around a lot with his mom. He's playing with his car. He doesn't really have any friends. We get that indication, but I'm not sure in their one brief conversation that Chaitanya really picks up on that. Like,
no.
how much of the same but different they really are.
Yeah, so like,
did we need two more scenes, three more scenes?
The viewer picks up on it. But there's no way Bateman might not even pick up on it, because he's still condescending and is, you know, when he determines that this kid is his enemy, that's he's got zero problem turning on him and thinking and knowing he's smarter and can outsmart him. So we needed a lot more, I think.
That leads into how to improve it. You know, some scenes like that, for one.
I've got one more thing that didn't work regarding Catherine Hahn, and it's just I made a note of it. When they first get to the hotel, and this was in the midst of a lot of confusing things for her character, when they first get to the hotel, she asks the bartender if he knows how to make an old fashioned, which is fine, I guess. But just order the old fashioned. He'll tell you if he doesn't know how to make it. And newsflash, it's going to be a really, really uncommon experience if he doesn't know how to make an old fashioned.
It's also an interesting order at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. She was just like, "I'm going to get you."
And the thing is,
and spill your guts. Like, that's it.
That hotel bar is, that's not the bar you get an old fashioned at.
No,
that's like you get a liquor and a mixer, or you get a draft beer, maybe a glass of wine.
Keep it simple, right? It was she said it and it was just kind of like, wait, what, there? And they're trying to establish that it's like a sort of a borderline dumpy hotel that gave him a dumpy closet as a room, and then it's like, oh, you guys can make anything here, right? Like,
yeah, you're getting like a well whiskey on that one, or like a well bourbon.
That's
a good catch.
That was a weird one for me. And one more, which could also improve it, right? As we talk about sports choreography, we're going to talk about spelling bees in the same way. We get it. Bateman is super smart and can spell any word. But everybody who's ever participated in a spelling bee knows you got to say the word, spell it, say it again. And he just goes right into the spelling every time. And I don't know if I'm like overly conditioned through a few different spelling bees in elementary school to this, but it irritated the hell out of me that he would not say the word, then spell it, and then say it again. Like, those are the rules.
It doesn't give us any reason to believe that he's just not going to cruise through this. And I feel like we need to be we need to believe in him a little bit less, and not that we're believing in his mission, but we need to at least think that something might legitimately go wrong for him.
And it's a perfect opportunity to use that and build some drama, right? Like if anti-disestablishmentarianism was one of the words, right? Like if anti-disestablishmentarianism, they just go right into it. All the kids did it. And it's like, nope, that's not proper form. It's not believable, not believable, not stuffy enough for the proctor there to be particular about how you're formatting your answer.
Fucking Encyclopedia Brown over there just going into it. I think if you're improving this one, I think you make him a little, you have to make him a little more redeemable.
Yeah.
I think psyching out the kids is different than like nearly assaulting them, like doing something that would get you arrested. I think if he, you know, something about, oh, a lot of tough words. Oh, that's a tough word. Wow, man, all these kids are really smart. Like, I can't, you know, or something like that versus the irredeemable stuff. And then I would listen. You've got Alice and Janie and Catherine Hahn, like, let them cook. Let them do something.
I think that's it. I think he, again, in terms of his development, was a flat line through the entire movie. And if he was even slightly more dynamic in his development, it puts it up a few notches. And you do that, you clean up purpose for Hahn and Janie, and you've got yourself, it's borderline no holes in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing with that development is it points to a conundrum in another sports movie. Tin Cup, Costner is the same dude at the end of the movie that he was at the beginning.
That's a great great.
Same fucking guy. The guy who blows up the U.S. Open, go back to your driving range. You're still a dumbass. Like, it's the same guy. It's the same thing here. And like, yeah, it seemingly works out for him. And the one thing, we also don't get anything about what this closure, he has been building up his entire life for this. Now, he hasn't known that Bowman is his dad the whole time, but you've got to imagine with how much this gets at him, he has been thinking about this for years, for his entire life. And we don't, there's that, you know, that brief, you know, he gives him the letter, he tears it up, says the thing about being your son, he walks off. We see briefly Bowman reading the letter, but we don't get anything about any acknowledgement of like how this makes him feel, like his life's mission. It's like, you know, what's he, you know, like Grayson and I watched The Princess Bride the other night, and Nigo Montoya kills the six-fingered man. And he's like, I don't know. I've been doing this my whole life. I don't know what to do now. Guy doing the same thing. We don't see any acknowledgement of like this massive weight just fell off your shoulders, or maybe it wasn't a weight. Maybe it was your sole purpose in life and now you're lost. I don't know.
Doesn't he allude to closure at some point in it too? And again, I just watched it like hours before we recorded this, so I should be the one answering this. But he's talking to the kid and they're talking about, oh, it's the kid trying to convince him that it's not all about winning. And he's like, well, yeah, closure is pretty good too. Right. So it's like they're very aware of this.
Yeah. But we don't see it. Like you don't see the emotional weight.
They just sort of just like assume it happens. And
yeah,
I will say when he ripped up the letter and was like, what could you write that I would possibly be interested in reading? He's like, well, I put a bit in there about being your son, and then just like walks away. Like that was pretty funny to me. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
tying in and proving it to our last category before more restore, you know, prequel, sequel, or remake. I don't think this movie will be remade, prequel, sequel, anything like that. I would be interested, and this is just a hypothetical thing because it won't happen. Bateman now having, he has had, this is his directorial debut. He has now done episodes of Ozark. He's done other things directing. I would be interested to see what this movie looks like with 8 years, 8, 9 years of Bateman directing experience now, like being behind the camera versus his first debut. Because I think it's good. I think it needs some stuff that's fleshed out, and maybe, you know, maybe there was some stuff left on the cutting room floor, or maybe there was some different directions that they would have gone. I'd be very interested to see what this movie would look like with him, you know, having that experience under his belt now and being able to see it as a whole.
Yeah, that's an interesting hypothetical. I would like to see conceptually a Spelling Bee movie done again. I think there are other ways to do it. The way modern sports movies are done too, you could get an ESPN tie-in and have like the actual Scripps National Spelling Bee be the event that it is.
I will say there's a movie called Aquila and the Bee, but I believe that is not the kind of movie we're looking for.
Okay. I just, because conceptually there aren't many even, you know, obscure sports that haven't had movies made. I mean, like Cool Runnings is a thing.
Yeah.
Like we could use a curling movie probably if that doesn't exist.
Men with Brooms.
Oh, you've covered
it's
that.
The one, I have covered Men with Brooms. Men with Brooms is a quality movie. It is funny. Leslie Nielsen in that movie. Love it. Not perfect. But it is, we've got a curling movie. We got one.
Okay.
Men with Brooms. You're watching that after 7 days. I'm not even sure where you can stream that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, right, so we had Aquila and the Bee in 2006.
Okay.
Drama, Lawrence Fishburne. So Aquila Anderson, 11-year-old spelling enthusiast, attends Crenshaw Middle School, predominantly black school in South Los Angeles. So we kind of see where that plot is.
Okay.
You know,
a little more.
Like, yeah. I mean, I'd be game for. Yeah, I'd be game for some more. Yeah, I mean, this movie had a budget of $6 to $8 million, so they didn't put a ton behind it, but they did get Lawrence Fishburne. And Angela Bassett, who is still, we were talking about Amanda Peet before we started recording, but Angela Bassett is just
yeah,
just she is just beating the shit out of time. time keeps coming for Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett keeps knocking time out in the first
round.
Ends
it off.
Just incredible. Incredible stuff. Yeah. Incredible stuff. But man, this was fun.
Yeah.
It is always great having you back on, talking Spelling Bee, talking whatever. Tell the folks again, K and the Crazies, what's the situation?
Yeah, K and the Crazies, narrative podcast series about Duke men's basketball head coach Mike Krzyzewski and the symbiotic relationship he has with the Cameron Crazies, the student fan base there at Duke for the men's basketball team, Krzyzewskiville, and how they do all these abnormal things, tenting to get seats to games, the organized infrastructure of it, and just the beast that it's become. The rise of K obviously runs parallel to the rise of the prominence of the Crazies. So K and the Crazies, by the time this is out, we should have a Kickstarter up and running that Kyle's going to be so kind to link and push out and try and get some small backers for. So yeah, we started as a film project. We're trying to recoup some of the sunken personal costs of initial production and get this thing out right around the time that ACC basketball season is going to be right in the thick of things. Kay is going to be close to on his way out, maybe even making a run at a national championship. You know, we'll see how his players behave between now and then.
Well, everyone go check that out. Again, that link's going to be in the show notes. If it's not out by the time this episode drops, we'll put it in next week's show notes. I'll tweet it out. I'll make sure to keep you guys in the loop. If you enjoyed this episode, remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, if you want to support the show, patreon.com/bigscreensports. You can vote on all the movies that we are covering next month. We have live polls for that, so go check that out. And we'll catch you next Monday. Thanks for listening.